To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Saturday morning again, 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me here is, what's your name again?
Stop.
What is it? Huh? Stop is your name, Stop. This is my son, Alan. He runs the performance side of our division, and my daughter runs the other side of our division, and they both share the responsibilities. And your mom and I are semi-retired.
Mm-hmm.
Semi-retired. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. I want to tell you a story.
Okay.
A lady has an old Chevy pickup, and she buys a aftermarket air conditioning assembly.
Okay.
And she takes it to a friend of hers, and it's gone for a long time and so forth and so on. And as you well know, you have to deal with the firewall between the engine and the person's feet. You have to disassemble everything because there's a new sandwich that goes on called the evaporator case.
Mm-hmm.
You have to mount the compressor. You have to deal with the cooling system. You have to deal with the radiator. You have to deal with the condenser and all the electrical associated with the controls.
Yep.
So it didn't work real well. So it's a basket case in the very worst scenario.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shops run from this. So I call around to the guys that I know are capable, and I explain it to them, and they're all no. They're all no. Say, I'm too busy to take on something like that. So I tell the lady, this is going to be really expensive because somebody's going to have to go back in and
unwind.
Well, yeah, if he did stuff wrong, but somebody has to finish it, and hanging the compressor on it without any hoses is nothing. So it's just, so I call Tom Blackwell from Blackwell Automotive, and I say, you know, nobody's taken this, and I feel sorry for the lady, and this is kind of a truck that has sentimental value to it, and, you know, gosh, I wish I could find somebody to help her. And he goes, well, tell me about the situation. So I do. And I says, really and truly, nobody wants this. And I said, it's a recipe for disaster. I mean, you got two cooks in the kitchen and all that kind of stuff. And he goes, well, he says, I'd like to look at it. And I go, are you crazy? He goes, no, I'd like to look at it. I said, okay. I said, I'll put you in touch with Vicky. So the two of them get together. She takes the car over. He finishes it in 2 days. It's done.
Wow.
It blows cold air. Everything works. Doesn't overheat. Everything. And I said to him, I can't believe. He says, well, we put 1.5 guys on it. He says, it wasn't going to be a problem. It was just take stuff off and put new stuff on.
Mm-hmm.
It just really wasn't. I said, what was the hardest part? He says, the firewall, matching up the outside and the inside. He says, and we had the hoses made, and we had this, and we had that, and this is what we did. And he said the kit was pretty complete. The kit was, if I'm not mistaken, was $3,000 or $4,000.
Sure.
So she probably spent $5,000 or $6,000 to put this together and have a truck with air conditioning. But she called this morning. She said it was ready. It was two or two and a half days. She was going to go down there. There's no question in my mind, Tom did a great job.
Yeah.
But he did what nobody else in town that I knew of that wanted any part of that.
Yeah.
And that's a difficult situation because if you get to a point, let's pretend that the evaporator had a hole in it and the evaporator might have been $900. So then the question is did it have a hole in it when I got it?
Mm-hmm.
Or did it have a hole in it because I created it?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got everybody pointing fingers and all that kind of stuff. And on top of all of that, customer parts, that you're assuming that they ordered the right kit. And if they didn't, then how do you unwind that deal? You can't send half the parts back on kit 1, 2, 3 and then order 1, 2, 3, 4 and think that they're going to make that kind of adjustment. Just not going
to
happen.
Not to mention, if they did order the wrong part and this thing is now tied up in your bay,
yeah,
that's the worst part. And we've been in that situation before.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember somebody's truck in that bay for like 400 years.
That wasn't waiting on parts. That was waiting on labor.
Oh, it was?
Yeah.
It was waiting on labor? Yeah. Whose labor were we waiting on?
Mine.
Oh. Your truck was in that bay so long there was moss growing underneath the tires.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yep.
And your excuse was?
I got way too far into the thing and
all the dads out there are just laughing their butts off. You start, as you put your thoughts together.
No.
Okay.
It just, it, I unwound it too far. I got way, I bit off more than I could chew, and then I just wasn't looking forward to going back and finishing it up.
Okay. But so the, let me describe it so that everybody has a flavor for it. This is a rack that goes on the top of your truck.
Yeah, but that wasn't the, that, that's not the whole issue.
Let me finish. Right. Okay, there's lights all the way around. Yeah. There's this huge light bar to the front. There's corner lights. There's dust lights. There's lights in the back. And you have a touch pad.
Yeah.
So you touch the pad, and how many buttons did that have?
Eight.
Okay, so it has eight different circuits. Yeah. So if you want 1, 2, and 7, you just go 1, 2, and 7.
Right.
And it's kind of an off-road thing. It's certainly nothing you're going to drive down the street on.
Right.
So you had to wire the touch pad to the rack.
Yes.
And put all the powers and grounds in.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that wasn't the hard part.
What was the hard part?
The hard part was is when I started the project, I have, you know, my truck's in 08, so I've got 12 years of different employees wiring on the truck. So every place you turn from underneath the dash to on the side of the dash to underneath the hood, there's just wiring everywhere, and it looked like crap. Okay. And it always bugged me. And so basically I went and I tore everything out and rewired everything from front to back.
And did you put like, did you tape all the wires together and then put shrink over the top of it and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so it's like, loom. Whoa. I mean, it's like
beautiful.
Beautiful.
It's Salem beautiful.
It's, yes.
But now that you've done that once, are you prepared to do it again and again and again as you sell those racks?
Well, no, I wouldn't unwind a customer's that far.
Okay.
That was just because it was mine.
Okay.
But I do all the wiring on all the racks, yes.
Okay, so you do it now.
I do it.
Okay. Yeah. Didn't your truck have a birthday or two in that bay?
No.
Oh.
It wasn't that long.
How long was it?
I have no idea. 2-3 months?
And then you can't say whether
two or three months?
2 or 3 months?
Yeah. Maybe longer. I don't know.
I'll look at the security tape, and I'll let you know how long it was in there. So, nevertheless, you were successful in doing it.
Yep.
But that was a good example of somebody going in and really not doing it right and then having to unwind the whole thing and start over.
Uh-huh.
So.
I don't know if it was right. It was just 12 years of different wiring styles and different stuff. So some people wire sloppy, some people wire neat, some people wire with relays, some people wire with bob. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's 4 or 5 different people wiring, you know. Different things.
So. And how did you handle this power supply controls, like the fuses and stuff? Did you put circuit breakers in? Did you put fuses in?
No, fuses.
Okay.
Fuses. And the, but most of the stuff got tied into the Switch Pro, so it there is no fuses, there's no relays, there's nothing.
Okay. But the harness from all the lights goes into the Switch Pro, which is the push
which is
button.
The brain box,
okay. Uh-huh. Now, the fuse panel, how many fuses did it have in it?
It doesn't have it only has one 250 amp fuse now for the whole Switch Pro.
Okay, so for the whole thing, if that blops, you lost your controls, everything. You lost all your lights and everything.
But if one light goes out, the rest of them will still work, which is kind of nice. That's why. So if one light, it will shut that circuit down. It won't ruin or affect the other ones. It will blink and tell you there's a problem that you need to address, but it won't shut the whole thing down.
And what is the purpose of all these lights in the rack on top of your truck?
So that when I'm sitting in the driveway unloading groceries, I can see the between the front door and, you know, the front door of the house and the front door of the truck. It's very important.
Seriously.
or to just go, wow, isn't this cool? Check this out. Boy, wham.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, there's.
It looks like a saucer landing from Mars or Venus or something.
Mm-hmm.
So let me get this straight. There is no use for this on the road.
On the road, no.
Yeah. No use for this at all.
On the road.
There's nothing on the top of that rack.
I mean, unless you're in a stretch of road where there is no one for miles, yes.
Okay. And so how do you know the lights, they could run a half a mile or a mile on a flat road?
They could shine that far?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, absolutely.
Oh, that's great. How many of those have you sold, by the way?
3 since my truck.
Okay. All right. Okay. This is just, you know, I'm going risk and reward, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of amps when all the lights are on? These are all LED, right?
Uh-huh.
What kind of, you got a 250?
Yeah, 250 amp.
Amp? What's the fuse. Total amp for the whole thing?
I would have to do the calculations, but it's 34 times 4 and 17 times 4, so whatever that is.
Okay.
Is what each one of them are rated at.
Okay, I understand. I understand.
140, 2020, what's that? So, well, that would be 320, wouldn't it?
All right, give me I got my calculator again. Give me the, go ahead.
Less than 220, so it's 34 times 4.
34 times 4, go.
Plus 17 times 4, that's...
Plus 17 times 4. 204.
Yeah.
Okay, so you put a 250 fuse in it just to give it a little, mm-hmm. a little extra. But anything over 250 is going to pop the fuse and kill the light bar.
Yeah, I hope that never happens. I think we have bigger problems if that happens.
It's this redesign of the car that kind of bothers me. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah. And your headlights are only supposed to be, they can be no lower than this and no higher than this. So if you get caught with that light bar on in the city streets accidentally, then, you know, it could be ugly.
You can't turn on accidentally.
You can't?
No. You can't turn on.
Yeah, of course. Nobody has kids that are sitting in the front seat that reach over and push a couple of buttons.
Well, I think you would notice pretty soon. I mean, it, like, lights up back to 04. I mean, it's... It lights the past up. It's so bright.
And the idea, you have these, if I can be so bold, you have guys that come in with these big up pickup trucks, tires and wheels and exhaust and all this kind of stuff, and they just, do they have an idea what they want, or are you showing them the menu?
I usually tell them what they want. No, they have an idea. You know, I just help them expand on those ideas.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you can. We're talking about car questions, but I want to talk to you when we come back about tire size and stuff.
Okay.
And I don't know if we've been able to change the tire size, although we did in my Dodge, going through the ABS module. We had a tough time doing that. Is it any better now? So when we get back, we'll talk about big tires and wheels and the effect it has on your speedometer. And is it model sensitive that you can do some modifications into the computer and tell the tire has a different diameter or different circumference? So when we get back, we'll talk about that. Be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Let me push the right buttons, and we'll be able to tape the show. So in case anybody says that we did something wrong, we can look and see if we did and admit it. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a guy that I've known since the early 80s. He opened up his shop in 1983. He's been around a long time. Folks, you won't find very many shops that have 20 and 30 and 40 years of experience. It's just real easy to have the idea you can open one, but on the other hand, is to sustain your forward movement is quite another. Nevertheless, Tom doesn't have that problem. He's at Deer Valley and I-17 in the northwest corner. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians, and he understands right from wrong, as all the shops that I do. I tell you that they're the best shops in Phoenix. So if you're anywhere near Deer Valley I-17, then Action Auto Repair would be a good one. Okay. So we're talking about fancy tires and wheels, which is this is in your wheelhouse. How are you when you put, you know, give me an example of what you take off and what you put on.
I don't know, 32s, 33-inch tall tires and put on 35s or 37s.
Okay. And so are you changing the way, can you go through the ABS module through the PCM?
No. No, okay. We don't change any speedos,
okay.
Especially on the late model stuff, because that usually entails going with a aftermarket programmer, and people don't like that with warranties.
Okay, but like on mine, we just changed the diameter of the tires going through the ABS module
with the aftermarket tuner.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, mine's right on the money.
Yeah.
Mine's right on the money because the screen gives the speed, and my GPS gives the speed, and the speedometer on my dash gives the speed. So it's right on the money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, I'm happy with mine. It hasn't broke yet. So is my warranty over yet?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think so.
Yes, you had a taillight warranty.
Yeah, a taillight warranty?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, good. 602-508-0960. If you have a question about tires and wheels or lift kits, he can handle that. If you've got a question with my car drives bad or I've got this problem or they told me they needed this, then I can help you with that. Speaking of that, I took my truck in the other day for a recall on the shift interlock. So they have to replace the shift interlock.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm not hearing you real well. Okay, yeah, he does. Yeah. All right.
Is my mic on?
I don't know.
I didn't touch that.
Oh, there it is.
Is it? Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Way to go.
Yeah. I mean,
he probably kicked it.
I may have. if that's the case, I pulled it. Okay, this is four. This is mic four. If that's the case, move over to the other chair to mic three.
All right, well, it's working now, so let's just we'll see if it goes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah, you're shifting the lock. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then I get a safety check, maintenance safety check, and he hands it to me, and
I'm sure you did.
I did. I did. And I looked at him and I said, did you find anything wrong? And he smiled. He says, on your truck? And I said, did you find anything wrong? So I look at it. It's a single page. It has 27 steps. 27. And I look at it and they're all green.
27
items.
Items to check off.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I did a research not too long ago about those kinds of safety and maintenance. Do you know what the highest number I found that one particular, and I'm not going to say, I'm going to give you an example. It could be a chain store. It could be a particular dealership of a particular model car truck. You know what the highest number of lines on the inspection safety report is?
Like what is the highest number of checkpoints?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. It's probably north of 100.
134.
Yeah.
134. So it was amazing to me to expect your staff to go through 134 points on a car and think that that was going to be something that would pan out on the numbers, because you've got all that uncompensated time to have the guy go through and make sure that that the left rear door shuts with 3 pounds of pressure.
Yeah. It's hard enough to get our guys to check the tire pressure with an oil change.
Don't say that.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
But that's
in general.
Yeah.
And
that inspection at the oil change, it's universally accepted that it's check the tires, check the brakes, check the fluids, check the hoses.
Rubber components,
and look for tire
wear.
Wipers,
tires, yeah.
And those are the kinds of things that we should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing some industry standard work with respect to what are industry standards. I have a variety of cases that have to do with that on my plate right now. And it is, one of them is really obvious that to me it's, they expect us to look into the future and know this is going to happen.
Right, right.
And that's just not possible, because if that was possible, then your truck would never break down and neither would mine.
Right.
So it's just not possible. But on the other hand, somebody not too long ago had their car in, and then the tire fell off, you know, four blocks later. That's happened to us.
Yeah.
Well, it's happened to us. So you have to raise your hand, because you were the last guy that had an air gun and lug nuts.
Uh-huh.
In our particular case, it was what, two blocks away?
Yeah.
And so the wheel goes rolling off, and through the grace of God, nobody got hurt, but the wheel did damage some other cars. And so we took care of all of that, but you kind of learn from your mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a caller, Gil.
That's right, it's Harry.
Harry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark and Alan.
Good morning.
Yeah, I've got a question. I purchased a new vehicle. It's a 2019 3.5 with an EcoBoost. And what is the deal on these oil catch cam modifications that I've heard them talk about, especially for these particular vehicles?
They don't worry about it. Honest to God, I mean, they say it's a big thing. If you tune those, you can tune those real good. Those EcoBoosts, you can throw some real good horsepower at those things. If you were worried about, you know, at that point, you might run a catch cam, but other than that, there needs to be a reason for a catch cam. You just don't put one on willy-nilly and expect it to do
well. Yeah, the reason I heard was the fact that you get the with a direct port injection and everything, you get the oil caking at the intake valve that just kind of eliminates that. Is that correct or is that not correct?
I don't know. How would that eliminate that?
I don't know.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I've heard a lot about them. I've had people ask me before. I've not put one on.
Let's describe it for the people that are listening. The catch can catches oil that's expelled from the engine through pressure because somebody's running it hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So if you're not going to have your foot on the floor a whole lot of times, then chances are you don't need the catch can. And if you do need the catch can, I'm going to assume that we're going to have some oil on the engine because it's blowing it out the oil cap, or
right,
it's blowing it out,
right,
some kind of event.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what the. I mean, maybe there is a good reason for it. I'm not familiar with what the reason would be.
Are we putting
especially
catch cans?
Especially in a stock application.
Okay. Are we putting catch cans on anything?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No.
And we're thinking about putting a catch can on mine because I am blowing a little oil, and it's nothing that creates a spot that's more than 3 inches.
But yeah, yeah, but yours is a completely different design as far as why we're doing it for you. But why
are we doing it for us is the question.
Us, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. Because we changed valve covers and it got the whole CCV or the crankcase ventilation all screwy. So we're working with that right now. But just willy-nilly, I don't see an issue.
Okay.
I would leave it alone.
And what we're doing is we're taking, you and I are taking the fumes from the valve cover, this new fancy valve cover we have, and we're just running them back into the side of the engine, which is a connection that was already there anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. With the new valve cover, it doesn't vent like the old one does, so we had to create a vent, but it's also pushing oil, so we got to capture that oil and drain it back in. And so,
Harry, is your wife take that and hot rod the heck out of it?
Oh, yeah, she gets on and runs it real hard.
Okay. Aren't we working on a lot of those EcoDiesels?
EcoBoost.
EcoBoost. Is that an EcoBoost you're talking about?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Okay. Don't we work on one?
I went over to the dark side and got the Ford now.
So. Okay. All right. Is he talking about
I called and asked him about him probably 6 months ago, and he says, yeah, I get the four-wheel drive EcoBoost 3.5.
He has a bad habit of spending other people's money. That's really easy. All right, I'm up against a break, Harry. Thank you very much. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Dodge and the problems with the Dodge. Okay, the little four cylinder. Well,
that's going to be a short segment. We're talking about problems with the Dodge.
Well, we're talking about the EGRs and all that kind of stuff that we're seeing. EcoDiesel.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to talk about those because obviously we're doing a whole lot of work on those that's really expensive and they haven't fixed yet. We'll be back. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and Alan Salem here at your service. If you have a car question about your car, about something you've been told, those are the kinds of questions we can guide you. We can talk out loud. And our repair industry has wide variations to it. There's lots of different thought processes, and I think we can discuss the extremes as well as the middle. And that's kind of what I think you want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In Mesa, the repair shop, the only repair shop that I can really recommend is Thompson's Auto Repairing and Towing. They've been around since 1970. Both Brian and his wife have roots that go into Mesa in the 50s and the 60s with respect to gas stations and auto repair. So Thelma and Brian both come from that kind of an environment. You only have to meet one or the other of them to understand why I think so highly of them and their ethics and their ability to fix cars. So they're on Main Street just east of Stapley. If you're in Mesa, that's the only shop. I'm sorry. That's the only shop I can recommend. We talk about the EcoBoost, which is the V6 twin turbo Ford.
Yes.
Okay, and then we got the EcoDiesel, which is the Dodge diesel.
Yeah, Dodge half-ton diesel.
Okay, and the problems that we're seeing right now, just describe them in general.
On the EcoDiesel?
Yeah.
Emissions related, just bad, poor design, emission related stuff.
Okay, all right, let me try to clean it up. We have an EGR, which is an exhaust gas recirculation valve.
Yeah.
So we take some of the exhaust that's clearly going to have some unburnt fuel in it, and we're going to recycle it through the engine.
Right.
Okay. The EGR, for whatever reason, is melting where it lives, and it's causing damage to the plastic around it?
No, I think what's happening is it's the cooler that's supposed to cool that coolant is getting plugged up, so it's spending a lot of time in that cooler. And it's getting really hot, and then going straight from there into a plastic piece and melting it.
Okay. So we're going to cool these exhaust gases as it comes out of the engine.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to go through a cooler to do that.
Yes.
And then from there, we're going to redirect that through some plastic pieces back into the engine to be consumed again.
Yes.
Okay. So these plastic pieces, because the cooler goes bad, then all of a sudden the hot gases go right through the cooler and go into the plastic and causes a problem. So the exhaust gases aren't cooled as they should.
Right. Okay. Right.
And those costs, I know we do a lot of those because many of our commercial clientele has a lot of them. Now, we've got one of them. How many does he have? The one
I think they have like north of 15.
Okay. And so what are most shops doing to those, and what upgrades do we have on that little Dodge diesel?
I don't know that there's an upgrade. We're just replacing them. I could tell you it all depends on how you drive and how far you drive. If I get a 17 in there with 195,000 miles, it needs a lot less work than a 17 with 35,000 miles on there. Okay. Basically, because they're driving further, they're allowing the engine to heat and cool, allowing it to do proper regenerations, stuff like that.
So drive it like you stole it, as opposed to you got a hot cup of coffee between your legs.
Yeah, I don't know about like you stole it. It's drive it for extended periods of time, not just 2 miles here, 2 miles here, 2 miles here, 3 miles here.
Okay.
You know.
What about the what's the benefit of going longer? Just keeping the temperature in the engine?
Keeping the temperature in the engine, but it allows it to regenerate, which is going to, regenerate the DPF, and it keeps everything cleaner. That's its way of self-cleaning.
Okay.
So if you're getting a little bit of a regeneration on this trip, and then a little bit here and a little bit here, eventually that adds up, and it never gets to a proper operating temperature and cleans out itself.
Okay, the regeneration is the computer's ability to go in there and clean up some portion of the exhaust system, more than likely.
Yeah, there's a filter in the exhaust, and basically what they're doing is they're lighting that filter basically on fire to clean it.
Okay.
To regenerate itself.
Okay, so what they're going to do is they're going to send additional fuel there. They know it's already hot, so they're going to create this regeneration, which is nothing more than like cleaning the filter on your vacuum cleaner. In the sense of radio.
Yeah. Except with using fire or heat. Yeah.
Now, so what happens if somebody says, I do drive around town, but I leave it idle? Better or worse?
No, idle's not real good for it.
Okay.
No.
The long sustained.
Yeah.
And it's called a heat cycle.
Yeah.
Take it up, get the entire engine and drivetrain up to heat, up to normal heat, and keep it that way for some period of time.
Right.
So
right.
The people that go through one heat cycle a day, but they still put 100 miles on there, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And we had that lady up north that had north of 100,000 miles, and we had that same problem with hers.
She was always off-road at 2 to 3 or 4 miles an hour, you had said, and it just never gets up to properly cleaning itself.
Okay. So, but there's other cars out there that have a regeneration system as well, and they're mostly diesels. We're not doing gas motors with regeneration.
Right. Yeah, okay. It's only diesels, yeah.
And all we're doing is trying to clean up the soot that goes into the exhaust so that we don't restrict the exhaust and we don't create a restriction somewhere in the from the exhaust valve to the tailpipe.
Right.
Okay. So those are the kinds of things that you deal with on diesels. There are some tricks to keep the driving costs down just a little bit, and one of them is I know you don't like it, but drive it like you stole it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be times when you're on your way to Flagstaff that, you need to put your foot to the floor and get that thing hot and put a load on it. And, hauling a boat and that kind of stuff would help. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. AutoDynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. It's family-owned and operated since 1982. Chuck started it, and his son Derek runs it. As the second generation often always is, Derek's a little better on business than Chuck is. And it just has to do with a generation or two between the two. But if you're in Sun City, the only shop I can really recommend to you is AutoDynamics. Once you meet Derek, you'll know what I'm talking about. And once you see the shop, you'll know what I'm talking about. But if you have another shop in Sun City you like, stay there. But if you don't, then may I suggest AutoDynamics might be a good place. We talk about cars, and so we're going to talk to Charlie, but that reminds me of a story I want to tell.
Okay.
All right. Charlie, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. On a Ford 7.3 turbo diesel, I got a leak where the dipstick connects with the pan.
Oh, yeah.
And I've heard you're talking about this thing. I think it's strictly diesel has a part that might work.
Okay.
Do you know if that's is that a guaranteed fix?
That is a that is as close to a guarantee of a fix as you're going to get. Yes. We have used those in the past, and they work, yes.
Okay, now, does the guarantee depend on them putting it in, or could I put it in myself?
No, you would. I don't know what their guarantee is. I just know what the alternative is, because the alternative is really, really bad. So this is an easy way. I would not put it in if I were you. I've put them in, and they're not real easy to put in. But I don't know as far as their guarantee or anything how that works.
Yeah, but let's talk about ours. If we sell, first of all, we don't sell people parts like Strictly. They have a completely different right. line assembly. But if we sold somebody a part and they installed it and we had a problem, we're not covering that.
Oh, yeah,
because
for sure.
We can't cover
right.
them. So, and they didn't pay any labor to have it done.
Right.
On a 1 to 10 scale, this is a...
Oh, it's been a while since we've done one, but I would say a 6 or a 7.
I would agree. 6 or a 7 in difficulty.
Yeah.
The problem is that this device... to fix this dipstick problem is only used once. You can't use it twice. You can't install it and screw it up and then pull it out and put it back in. So it's not likely that you're going to have. But did you talk to Strictly about what the cost is to do that?
I think I've heard you guys talk about it on the radio. I think it's around $300 for the part.
Okay. Well, I'd certainly call them. And here's why I say that, is you want somebody who's done this a lot. Okay,
yes.
Because they're going to know what to do, they're going to know how to seal it up, they're going to know how to install it, and they're not going to make a mistake. So that's valuable, but you call them up and just tell them Salem said that you'd do it for $100. What do you think? And just it's he's going to laugh just like you laughed. So he may say, "Well, if you know Mark Salem, it's going to be three times the normal amount." And then say, "Oh, did I say Mark Salem? I'm sorry." And just make up another name. But, yeah, it's worth asking them. And speaking of the 7.3, I had a friend of mine that had up pipes. Describe the up pipes and what they do on the 7.3 that I guess is a somewhat common repair.
Real common.
Okay.
Yeah, it takes the pipes from the manifold, moves them from the exhaust manifolds up the back of the engine,
okay.
And then they basically Y into the turbocharger inlet, so
okay.
Exhaust side inlet. Basically.
Okay. All right. So
and they're bellowed. Okay. They're like they look like an accordion at one point, and they leak from those points.
All right. So the accordion is really like their people's hose in their vacuum cleaner, where it stretches out and it's got all the different winding in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just we have to draw a picture on radio.
Yeah.
So it somebody said that they had up pipes. Now, what's the up pipes cost? What do you charge to replace the iPad?
It's a pretty big job, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. It's
bracket?
Huh?
Bracket?
It's north of $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I was going to say $1,000 to $1,200 is what I usually see.
Yeah.
So the up pipes are... Now, how do you know when the up pipes are bad?
It depends on how bad they are. Noise and lack of power.
Okay. All right. So they're leaking. Noise is the exhaust leaking, and lack of power, they're leaking.
Right.
So you're likely to hear the up pipes
right.
if there's a problem.
Right. Well, not, if you look at them, they're covered in soot, then you know that they're bad. But, it's a very common issue.
Okay. That it, Charlie?
Well, roughly, what would you guys charge to put that part in?
I'd have to talk with the tech on Monday and look up the last one we did, because I don't recall. It was either more difficult than we thought it was going to be, or it was less difficult than we thought it was going to be. So I know we were going to adjust it for the next time. So I don't know the answer. You'd have to call me on Monday.
And Charlie, we've got one guy that does all of our tech work. When he started, actually, his dad went to high school with me. When he started here, he was at the car wash cleaning up the car wash. He's now a master tech. He's the youngest master tech we've ever had. And he covers 100% of the diesel side, other than oil changes that we transfer to the mechanical side. So it's going to. How many have we done?
Probably 4 to 6.
Okay. So we have enough experience to decide what to do.
Oh, yeah.
So call Alan on Monday, and you talk to Adam and see what you guys put together.
Right.
But you need to call Strictly as well and ask them, where do you live in town?
Actually, I live in East Mason. That's one reason I don't want to go all the way to Strictly, but I may have to do that to get the part.
But they can ship you the part.
Yeah.
If you want to buy the part, under certain circumstances, we let people bring their own parts. That's not something that we normally do. But in this particular case, if you're going to go get it and bring it down, as long as it's still in the package and somebody hasn't already tried to stick it in, we'll do it for you.
Okay. All right. Hey, I really appreciate this. Thank you so much.
Okay, you bet, Charlie. Hey, Steve, you're up next. How can we help you?
Well, I've got a comment regarding Charlie. That's not why I called, but I've got a 7.3 myself, which is a 2001, and Strictly recommended new up pipes for me, and I bought some of the welded bellows style and thought, yeah, they're not that critical. So I went with the form bellows, which were much cheaper, put them in myself, and while it's a big bear, it's not a joy, but there's one screw that is just next to impossible to get to. And with all the combinations of universals and extensions and everything I could think of, I got it tight, but my God, what a job.
Now, tell us, on a 1 to 10 scale, from your point of view, what are the up pipes cost or difficulty? Let's talk about difficulty.
Difficulty. It was probably, for me, just being a shade tree mechanic, I probably had 6 hours into it.
Okay. So on a 1 to 10 scale, are you talking about a number 6 or a number 7 in difficulty, or are you talking about a 5?
Difficult. Due to that one screw, I'm talking about maybe an 8.
Okay. And we agree with you. We agree that it's not, it's some, now a lot of times we will move stuff to gain access. And that's something that's quicker than trying to, like you said, doing a bunch of different wobbles and stuff like that. So sometimes, I mean, sometimes we take one motor mount loose and lift the side of the motor up so that we can access stuff. So gaining access usually saves the customer some money in time.
That might have been the case in my situation, but I didn't move much. I can't really recall. I did that probably 2-3 years ago.
Okay. How do you like that 7.3?
Oh, it's great. I have no issues with it. The only problem I've had is leaking. I shouldn't say I had shorted injector wiring going through the valve covers. One time up in Montana, and thankfully I had a shirt sleeve relative that was the owner of the Ford dealership, and I got that turned around pretty quickly. And then another time, still on the road, up in Colorado. And the right bank went first, the left bank some years later, but other than that, I haven't done a thing to it, and the up pipes.
Those 7.3s, Alan, jump in here. Those 7.3s, people like those because that's a monster motor.
It's not monster. It's just very reliable, very easy to work on. Not real expensive. They're good motors.
It certainly is heads and shoulders above the 6 liter, and maybe even the 6.4 liter. The 6.7 has come out of the gate with pretty good on the Ford side, but the 7.3 is like the 454 gasoline powered Chevrolet. It's just big and it's strong, and people like that. And so you either heard it from you or somebody else, maybe Bob, that said that they're almost getting what they paid for them back when because people want them so bad, and people especially that are hauling trailers and stuff.
So
I like the 7.3 because you've passed on to me that it's been very reliable. It's not hard to fix, but it's not easy to fix, and the people that have them usually have a really nice cab and really nice bed, and they've taken good care of them. What's the year spread in the 7.3?
Believe the good ones are like 98.5 to 03.
Okay, so the tail end of 19's up to the
02,
Okay. Alrighty. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And we talked about Strictly Diesel just a minute ago. Nate's a great guy. He comes from a really good family. And, we had him in the studio not too long ago. He brought his daughter. And, she was really, really good. She just had lots of confidence in the business of the company as well as at what she's heard with her dad. But they're on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Unlike what the sign says, he actually works on your gas motors and stuff. So if you have a diesel, you're the primary customer. If you want an oil change, a tire rotation, stuff like that, cooling system flush, hoses and belts, he'll do that as well. So he's up there, like I said, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And you can go to their website and look for parts. And I think that dipstick repair came from them. Did it, or are they just simply the supplier?
No, I think they made that part, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they did, too.
I think he did.
I think what they did is design the part, then they turned around and manufactured the part, yeah. And they are the sole vendor of that dipstick repair. Who's that, Gil?
That would be Steve. He had a follow-up.
Oh, Steve, go ahead. You had a follow-up?
Yeah. Well, this is an oddball, and I've posted this on some forums and not gotten any replies, so I thought I'd give you guys a shot, too.
Okay.
It's a 87 L98 Chevy tune port injection installed into a 58 Corvette.
Okay.
Left bank, about a year ago, I pull into the garage, and I'm getting smoke out the left bank, left exhaust.
Okay, well, what color? Let's not pass that up.
What color?
Yeah.
It's a Bermuda yellow.
No.
No, it's not smoke.
The color of the smoke. I don't care what color the car is. I knew that was coming.
I thought maybe you're in the market for a 58 Vet.
Oh, no.
No, I expected, gray, black, blue, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
No, this is white, pretty much white.
Okay.
It smelled like oil.
Okay.
That was, as I pulled in, the engine was hot. I don't believe it was overheated, but it was a little bit hot.
Okay.
That was a year ago. Last Saturday, I pull in, and the same dang thing.
Okay. All right. I'm up against a break. Okay, I'm up against a break. But here's a couple questions I'm going to ask you in about 6 minutes. Number one, do you have an unexplained coolant loss? So every once in a while you look and the overflow jug's empty or something like that. Number two, I'm going to ask you, when you drive it for a long distance and you park it, you're going to your girlfriend's house, okay? You go to there, you park it, and then an hour later you come out and you get in it. Does it run poorly for the first few seconds? Does it run poorly so it's missing at the first few seconds? And you stay right there and we'll come and get a hold of you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. 508-0960. I know that. I know that. So one of the things that we talk about is the internet. And I'm not beating up Steve. I'm just saying the internet's not a good place to have someone diagnose a pain in your abdomen or a cyst on your arm or an earache.
A lot of YouTube technicians.
Oh,
YouTube certified.
And the problem with all of that is you have no idea. And I've said this before 100 times. If this guy was that good fixing cars over the radio, over television, over YouTube, he'd be working for me for north of $100,000. The idea is that I can't diagnose your car, but I can get close because I get to ask you questions, just like I got done with Steve. So white smoke, blue smoke, gray smoke, those are important. We know what causes those. And then I ask him other questions, and that'll help me. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. Mark and Alan Salem here at your service. You're more than welcome to join us if you'd like. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines and they're wide open. And just like we promised Steve, we're coming back. Steve, so tell us what color smoke you think it is. And then answer that second question is after you shut it off hot and you come back 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes later, does it idle smoothly right then and right there?
I would say it idles normal. I've got a pretty high lift cam in it, so the idle has never been terrific.
Okay.
And the smoke, I believe, is white. And the few times I smelled it, like I say, twice in 1 year, reminded me more of oil, but it could have been coolant. I wouldn't bet one way or the other.
Well, oil's blue.
I do seem to be using a bit of coolant.
Okay. All right. Well, if it's got a big cam, it's going to cover up the rough running. But if you bring up the idle a little bit and get it to where it runs smooth, what I'm looking for is that's what I'm looking for.
It's pretty smooth.
Okay.
I have raised the idle above factory spec, and it's reasonably smooth at that point.
Okay. The real process is this. We're going to pressure test the cooling system. So you're going to take it to a shop. The shop's going to let it cool down. They're going to squeeze the upper hose until it's no longer rock hard. They're going to take the cap off of it, put an air pump on it. They're going to look at the cap. It's a 16-pound cap. They're going to put 17 pounds of pressure in it, and they're going to walk away. And then they'll come back an hour later. And if it's lost coolant, then the question is where? If it hasn't lost coolant, then it's not going to be a coolant leak. So it's that simple. I'm not real worried about it overheating, because if you did overheat it and if you did do damage, I've already covered all the symptoms. So you're going to have water out of the tailpipe, but most of the time you don't see that because the water's going to turn to steam somewhere in the exhaust. But the end result is still the white smoke. So white smoke can also be transmission fluid. But blue, black, and gray and white are the different colors. But I probably just pay somebody to run a pressure test on it and say to them, you know, and here's the best part. If you do a pressure test on it and it's got an external leak, there'll be coolant on the ground directly below where the coolant leak is.
Right. So I have not seen that.
Okay.
At least when I come back in and park it, I'm not seeing evidence of coolant leak.
Okay. Does the oil look normal, or is there a foam to it or anything like that?
No. Yeah, the oil looks great.
Okay.
Stay well, nice and clean after quite a bit.
Yeah, you don't have any signs of it.
Correct.
So, you know, I keep an eye on the coolant, but how hot did it get? Do you have a gauge with numbers, or do you have a digital gauge, or what?
I've got an analog gauge, and but I use a infrared thermometer when I suspect it's hot, and it never seems to be very hot.
Okay. What is the upper? Where are you gunning? Where are you using your infrared gun?
Well, I'll nail the upper and the lower hoses.
Okay. There should be 10 to 20 degrees difference between those two hoses, but the upper hose really represents what the motor's running. And your motor should definitely run 220, 230. It'll love you if you can make it run 220 or 230.
Yeah, but with a stock radiator, or a relatively stock radiator, can't handle those kind of pressures, I don't believe.
There's no difference in pressure. If you got a 17-pound cap, it's no matter what radiator you got in it, no matter what heater core you got in it, no matter what hoses you got in it. Here's the problem. How often do you drive it, and how far do you drive it?
Oh, I don't drive it this time of the year a couple times a week, and generally not more than 20 miles at a run.
Okay, is it a freeway speed kind of thing, or is it through the town you're going to your daughter's house or your girlfriend's house or something like that?
Yeah, where we live, it would always be a combination, some freeway, and it seems to want to run hotter on the freeway for whatever reason.
Okay, if it wants to run hotter on the freeway, get your gun and start gunning the four corners of the radiator, because there's a good chance that the radiator is somewhat plugged up. Because what will happen is if you run water through a fire hose, it's not going to come out with any pressure. Let's pretend you're putting a lot of water to this fire hose. It's a 1.5-inch fire hose, so we're going to send a lot of water through this fire hose. Well, if you squeeze the fire hose, then all of a sudden you're going to speed the water up, because there's going to be pressure behind it, and there's going to be a whole bunch of fast-moving water, so it's not going to be in the radiator very long time. So when you have a plugged radiator, the symptoms you just gave me are classic symptoms. It runs hotter when I'm on the freeway than it does around town. So, and we want it to run over 220, because every time you park it, it's going to create 1, 2, or 3 tablespoons of water as we condense the moisture that's in the engine. Well, water boils at 212, and we got to get that motor up over 212 in order to boil the water away. So if you don't boil the water away, then the water and the oil turns to mush, and pretty soon it's not oil anymore. Pretty soon it doesn't have the properties of oil anymore. So you've got a newer model motor that wants to run at 220.
The other tool that we're using now is the thermal imagers on those radiators. Get it nice and hot, and then if you have access to a thermal imager, that will show you the dead spots in the radiator, if there is any. And that's a really cool picture when you see a good radiator that looks like that.
Yeah. Now it's a gun with this TV screen on it. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And so what you're doing is, okay, I understand. Yeah. You're looking for hot spots.
Yes.
And so you're going to wave it. You're going to start up in the upper left hand corner.
No, we usually shoot the whole thing.
At once.
Okay. It's wide enough to where we can shoot it from 3 feet and get the whole thing.
Okay.
And then there we can see exactly what it's coming in at to the degree, what it's going out at. And then, you know, I have pictures on my phone where the center is purple, you know, the entire center, and then all the way around it is red. So it's that purple is indicating a cool spot. And when I say cool, it's 60 degrees less.
All right. How do you do it if you got an air conditioning condenser in the front of the radiator?
Shoot it from the other side.
Okay. Okay. So that's possible.
Yeah. Or the other thing we'll do is it works pretty good. If we can separate them and shoot downwards, I can see it that way too.
Okay. Yeah. So that's it's the symptoms you have would suggest that there's some, the water goes through an open radiator real lazy, but when you squish the radiator down and you take a third away from the cross flow, then the water's going to go through faster, which means it has less time to drop its heat off. Because it's like a train station. The water comes in hot, drops the heat off, and continues back to the motor. So that's what I would do if I were you. All righty?
Okay. One other follow-up is, well, not a follow-up, but would an internal coolant leak explain the irregularity of observing this malfunction? It's been a year since I saw it, and I saw it last Saturday.
Okay. That's a great question, but nobody's going to be able to answer that till you find out what the problem is, if there's a problem.
Yeah.
So we can, the answer to the question can be yes or no, and that's not going to do you any good. So it's, and you don't feel bad because you're not the only one that does that. For me, on the radio and in emails and stuff like that, because I get a lot of emails, they ask questions like that, and I say with due respect, we'll answer that after we find it. That's not important for us to track it down. We'll just look at it, and if we say, we've had your car on pressure for 2 days, and it hasn't lost anything, and then we started it up, and we got it up to operating temperature, and then we shut it back off, and we let it sit for another 6, 7, 8 hours, and there's nothing on the ground, and we haven't lost any pressure. Well, we're done. We're just done. Okay.
The other thing, too, is, you asked that question, well, if you're doing 15-mile trips, and all of a sudden, it's happening on 20-mile trips, it could be something as simple as 1 mile causing, the heat to get up to a certain point and cause that internal leak. There's a lot of variables on that.
And he's right, because your cap, let's pretend your cap is a 15-pound cap. Well, the cap's going to give way anything above 15, and it's going to shove the water back into the overflow. So when we go in, we're going to kind of roll the dice, and if it's a 15-pound cap, we may do it to 16 or 17 pounds. And then we need to test it cold as well as hot. So that's why you sit overnight when it's cold, and then the next day you put one of your young kids that likes to hot rod your truck, and he goes out and goes down the freeway 5-10 miles, turns around, and comes back. And then that way we get to see it hot. So what part of town do you live in?
Way up northeast, east of Pinnacle Peak.
Okay. Well, Blackwell would be the guy that you talk to, and he's a hot rod guy, and he does what you did on that truck. And so he's really good at what he does. And the best part about Tom is if he needs a bracket, he doesn't spend days trying to find a bracket. He just builds a bracket. and so he's pretty good with that kind of stuff. But if you're going to have somebody do the cooling system, don't tell him what to do. Just tell him what you got. And then he'll know what to do. Okay?
Sure. We have time for another follow-up question. Another question. The 10SI alternator, which is standard in the 80s GM cars, is what I have. And I've had recurring failure of the voltage regulator, which is an internal regulator. And from what I understand, most all of the internal regulators fail on that car if you don't have enough load on them. And this car has no load when I'm driving it, unless I turn the headlights on.
That's not true.
Well, the HEI is about it.
Okay. Would that make any difference? It's not true about your 7127 alternator and the internal regulator. It's not true. I'll bet you $10, though, it's wired wrong. So that big lead that comes off there has to go through a certain circuit. What do you do with the small lead? Most guys will just loop it around to the other side. But the small lead has to go to the light. So yeah. It either goes to the light or the amp gauge. That's where it has to go.
Well, I have that wired properly.
Okay.
I'm running to a light, to an indicator light.
And when you turn the key on, it goes on. And then it's when you start it up, it goes off.
Correct.
Okay, well, get your voltmeter out. And the battery, first thing in the morning, should be somewhere around 12 to 13 volts. If it's 12-10, it's about 10% charge. So we want to see it close to 13. Now, when you start it up, it should run somewhere north of 13, even 13.5. If it's going 14 or 15, yeah, you have a regulator that's out of it. Now, the regulator will go bad when it tries to charge the battery and it doesn't see an increase in voltage. So if you have bad battery cables or you're not wired right, then otherwise we're just pouring all the water on the house that's burning. And it's just going to keep doing that because it doesn't see the voltage of the battery that it wants to see. So, like I said before, you got to have a negative cable, and it's got to go to the frame, it's got to go to the engine, it's got to go to the firewall. So it has to go, and the front core support. So from the fenders, left and right, and the core support where the radiator is, you got to have grounds in all of those. So we usually run the negative cable to the motor, then from the battery we run to the frame, and from the motor we run to the firewall, and from the motor we run to the core support. So you gotta have all those grounds, otherwise you got a motor that's grounded and sitting in three rubber donuts.
And that'd be something that Blackwell could up with too, right?
Oh yeah, that's a volt drop test.
Yeah.
You're talking about $30 on a volt drop test. So anyway, Steve, good luck to you. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open and you're welcome to join us. Nineteen minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, Mark Salem and Alan Salem are here. I've been in business in the car repair business since 1979. So is Alan, but he started picking up cigarette butts in the parking lot, and now he runs half of our business, which is the performance side: tires and wheels, exhaust, fancy lights, and all that other kind of stuff. So he's the one that gets to spend the happy money, because when you come in, you tell him what you want, and then your money is spent happy. On the mechanical side, we're telling you that you got a big problem. And we're telling, I'll turn off my speakers for you.
The guys up front wish they could deal with my customers.
Yeah. Your customers,
they're happy, and they drop, $10,000, and they're just skipping out the front door.
I tell people that they come in and grab your menu, it's got 20 check marks, and they'll do 7, 8, 10, 12, and sometimes a whole bunch more than that.
Yeah.
It's just happy money.
Yep, sure is.
And it's guys that aren't going to want their wife to pick it up and pay the bill because the bill might be kind of big. But it's just happy money versus sad money.
Sure.
That's the difference between your businesses and ours. Jang W., what can we do?
Hey, I was thinking about your conversation with Steve there about the smoke, the white smoke coming off the Corvette there.
Yeah.
I got a little confused as I was coming down the road thinking, at first that it was coming out his exhaust pipe, and then I got to think he said, off the left bank. I'm wondering if he was talking about coming out from under the hood from the top of the engine.
You could very well be right.
I didn't pick that up.
I didn't either. But let's talk about that as being a possibility. What color, if his valve cover was leaking and he had smoke off of one side or the other, what would it leak other than oil?
Nothing. It wouldn't be white.
Yeah. And it would also smell like oil because you're too close to that to be happening. So, yeah, no, you bring up a good point. Is this something you've experienced, JW?
Well, from our previous conversations, you probably got an idea that I have a lot of experience.
Okay.
Remember the guy had the vibrating 454?
Okay, I'm sitting here looking at a clock, and Alan's picking his nose, so I don't remember, but tell me about your 454.
There's a guy who had a 454 swap into a Corvette that used to be a 396, and he had a vibration that was, like, increasing as he revved the engine, and didn't matter if it was in park or if he was driving, and I mentioned that 454 is externally balanced, and that kind of lit up the whole idea that maybe he had used his internal balance flywheel and balancer on his 454 motor.
Either end of the crankshaft could be the problem on that. But anyway, it's, you're right. It could be some leak on the, on one side or the other, whichever one he had. And I didn't pick that up.
Yeah.
So if he was talking about the motor, then we missed it, but the colors are still the same.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a whole lot of difference. But anyway, thank you, JW. Thank you very much for that. And he picked up something that we didn't. So
yeah.
It is what it is. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The only transmission shop I can recommend in Phoenix is Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Been around since 1968. Phil's been there since 1968. And they do transmission repairs, transmission service, and transmission overhauls. And Phil says that we do a lot more of the two other ones than we do the rebuild. And with some of the newer model cars, you have to have proprietary equipment, scanners and stuff, to watch the input to the transmission, and then watch the output that the transmission deciphers the input and makes things happen on the output. So while we used to shift transmissions with foot pressure and speed and RPM, today we have a computer that switches you from first to second gear, and it looks at three or four, five different things. The temperature of the engine, where your foot's at, how fast you're going, and what your RPM is. So it's a little different today, but the diagnostics make it a little easier today. So Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. If you have a problem, may I suggest you stop by there. And it's a bad idea to stop by Monday mornings or Friday afternoons, because those are busy times and you might have to wait. So Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays is a lot better time to stop by most any repair shop. Okay, have we got anybody else, Gil? Okay, lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
I'll tell you one thing that I heard this week that really chaps my rear end is, customers saying that a training shop told them they won't know what is wrong, how much it's going to be until the transmission is on the ground and apart.
That is bothersome.
That is bad, because for those people who have nefarious reasons for doing that kind of stuff, once that transmission on the ground and is apart, you're at their mercy. Any transmission shop, any good transmission shop that knows what they're doing should be able to give you at least a worst case scenario estimate prior to even pulling that thing out.
And we know that because we have a transmission guy that we work with.
Yes.
And he doesn't do that. Now, I thought you were going to say pull the pan. And yes, we pull the pan. We want to see how much metal there is, how much clutch material
in
there.
No.
But you said pull the transmission.
Pull the transmission completely out.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No. Don't get involved in that.
Well, those kinds of stories in my world are pretty easy. So a little old lady who has 500 acres of a ranch up in northern Arizona, her husband just passed away, and she's certainly in her tall 70s and early 80s. She takes her truck into a repair shop, and it's not running very well. And the repair shop tells her that the entire fuel system has to be replaced. She reports it to her insurance company, because insurance companies, if you pardon the expression, they insure stupid. So when you have a wreck, you're stupid, and when you contaminate your fuel system. So the repair shop says that the fuel tank is full of dirt. Full of dirt.
Mm.
And the repair bill on this thing is $18,000. That's where it started. So then I send an investigator up there to pull a fuel sample, and the lab says, there's no dirt in this fuel. And the inspector said, I could see the bottom of the tank. So there's no dirt in it. So then the next thing they say is that it's full of gasoline. So then I send the inspector back, and he pulls a sample, and the lab says, it is. It's not full. It's one-third gasoline. And you and I both know they'll still run, not well.
Yeah.
Okay, so clearly she put gasoline in it.
Okay.
And she grabbed the wrong nozzle.
Yep.
Then the shop says, she has a tank in the back of her truck, and you know, and I know, yeah, I know you've done it. How many times have you done that?
I think two.
Yeah, I know two. Okay.
I think two. Yeah.
Where you put gas.
I always yell at my wife. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I always yell at my wife, it's the green handle, and I'm the only one who's ever done it. She's never done it.
Okay.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
So then the shop comes back after they say that it's dirt, and we say BS, and then they say it's gas, and we agree. Then they say it's DEF. She's contaminated the fuel system with DEF, and folks, DEF is very caustic, and it ruins everything from the fuel pump in the tank all the way to the injectors.
Everything it comes in contact with.
Everything diesel fuel comes in contact has to be replaced. The estimate's still $18,000. Mm-hmm. Now, it was $18,000 for dirt, and really and truly, give me off-the-cuff dirt contamination. What's it cost?
Not nearly that much.
Okay, worst-case scenario.
A couple filters drain the tank. I would say worst-case scenario, no damage, $1,000.
And I would agree with you.
Yeah.
That was a number in my head. All right, give me a gasoline contamination.
Oh, that's, I would say max. It's the same fix, actually.
Exactly.
Drain the tank, fill it up with fuel, hit the two filters, and be done.
Okay. But a DEF, what's that?
Oh, that could be $18,000.
Yeah, and it is. On the Fords, it's actually a little bit more. And Duramax and the Dodges, they're all north of 18, between 18 and 24, 25. So we decide to pull it out of there. And they charge us $18,000. And I said, why are we charging you? He says, well, we had to order all the parts. You have to buy the parts because we don't have any use for them. This is a true story.
I know it is. I'm just shaking my head because of how ridiculous it is.
We took it to I'll tell you right now, we took it to Chapman and Payson because it was up from up north. And I think they fixed it for like $1,800. They pulled the tank, cleaned it up, it had gas, put some filters in it, moved forward. But here's the real, it would have been cheaper, but they had to go in and put the engine back together
right. Because
we got it from them.
Right.
So it was a rape of unproportional size.
Yeah. If you mistakenly put DEF in your truck.
In the fuel tank, excuse me.
If you inadvertently put it in the fuel tank, absolutely under no circumstances, if you can help it, do not start that vehicle.
Because it'll be a lot cheaper
yes.
to do the work because yes. it's in the fuel tank only.
I had a customer, I know we're up against the break, but I had a customer call me. I just filled it up. I said, do not start it. Have it towed immediately. Have it towed over here, this and that and the other thing. As soon as the tow truck driver got there, he started and drove it up on the truck.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he caused that customer some big-time change.
Oh, unbelievable.
Ching, ching. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And one more time, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and you're welcome to call, comment, or give us your problem. We're happy to help you. 602-508-0960. Thirty-two minutes after the hour. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Alan Salem, and we've been in the car business for a long time. I've been in the car business for 40 years. He started 40 years ago. I don't know. What were you, 10 or something like that, or less? Anyway, 79, or were you even born?
I was born in 79.
Okay, well, then you were... Okay, whatever. Nevertheless, let me touch base real quick. 602-508-0960. And I want to talk about Kurtz. Kurtz is at I-17 in Bell. He has three technicians, or three people that are masters. There's Jeff, there's Eric, and Kurt. Kurt is a great guy, and he's bailed me out of a couple of problems where we had problems in his geographical area, and then he took the car. And he fixed the car. Now, one time for us, but other times for customers that were in his geographical area. So, I-17 and Bell. I-17 and Bell. Kurtz Automotive. Let's go to the phones. We got callers. And, Lauren, you're first.
There. Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a new 2019 Edge ST. Love the car. The only thing I really dislike about it is this auto stop when you come up to an intersection.
Yep.
I've been reading some articles, and I'm wondering if you have any experience with what they call a module auto stop eliminator plugged in behind the switch.
I did two of them yesterday at $60.
Okay. And they work. They're reliable.
I don't use the modules. I go in there and I just go in and I turn that off in the hex file in the computer. Yep, I just go in and shut it off, and you'll never have an issue. The switch won't work. Gauge won't come up.
Okay, let's explain auto stop. Auto stop is when you come up to a stop, the motor dies.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you take your foot off the brake and hit the gas, it starts the motor up and you drive away. It's a fuel economy thing.
Yeah.
Here's what the situation is. People are afraid of the starter. The starter on a 1 to 10 on that is a 20. With respect to durability and strength. And the regular Edge starter might be an 8. So there is a big difference between the starter. They've built the starter to kind of match instead of starting it once and you go to work and shut it off and then you start it again. This is stopped at every traffic light.
Right.
So if you want to do that, you can do that.
There's a lot of other things too that I can go in and like this one yesterday. You know how when you, if you leave it running, you go to a convenience store and you just take your key fob in and the horn honks twice as you're walking away. I can shut that off and, you know, there's all kinds of different stuff that we can do. Lighting. I can turn off the DRL, turn on the DRLs. We can, you know, there's a lot of different stuff, and it's one charge. It's $60, and I can go in there and change whatever you want.
But we're not going to do any safety stuff.
Yeah, no. I'm sorry.
But that's not, that wouldn't affect my warranty.
No, absolutely not. That module probably would, but if they found it, but they won't, they can't see what I, as a matter of fact, the two that I did yesterday were for the dealer.
Okay. So where are you at? I'm going to come and see you this week. I'm going to come down to see you find.
Okay. Just shoot me an email, which my name is Alan, A-L-A-N, Salem, S-A-L-E-M, just alansalem@AOL.com, and I can, yeah, it's easy, and you can wait on
okay.
it.
And that's what we got to do is his sister runs that part of the business. So, obviously, if somebody's going to wait for it, we just need to schedule to accommodate that. And so, obviously, you're not going to get a Monday morning or a Friday afternoon time frame, but that's okay. We can handle that. So, Alan would be your contact. And if you have a pencil handy, 480-598. And this is easy. 1234. 480-598-1234. And you can call before you come. Alrighty. Thank you very much. Thank you, Lauren. Okay, let's go to Gary. Gary, how can we help you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. Got a question. I've got a 2017 GMC Canyon with the 2.8 Duramax four-cylinder. A year and a half ago, my wife and I hauled a travel trailer, 5,000-pound travel trailer, to Alaska and back. 11,000 miles. We had a great time, and we're planning on doing it again this summer. I've got about 51,000 miles on the truck now, and I'm wondering if I should have or what you'd recommend being done before our trip this summer, for instance, replacing the transmission fluid, anything like that.
Oh, I'm on the middle of the razor blade about the transmission fluid. I would like you to just pull the stick and smell it. And if it was burned, now let me ask you, when you're pulling your trailer, is there ever time you pull it out of overdrive and kind of manually take over the shifting?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's good. You're finding an RPM range where you have power. The motor's up a little bit in RPMs, but you're not in overdrive, because overdrive isn't the one that's going to, you know, you're going to have the problem. But I don't see any other thing. I'm assuming you're up on your oil changes and your tire rotations. I'm assuming the spare tires.
Belts, hoses, tires.
But at 50,000 miles, and it's only a 2, and it's a 17.
I understand. Yeah, I'm just saying. I mean, we've seen stranger things as far as, you know, leaking around the hoses or leaking out the end of the hoses. I mean, just cool leaks, belts, tires. That's... Yeah, so important.
You run those at maximum inflation written on the side of the tire, cold. Maximum inflation on the side of the tire. Forget the door sticker. Maximum inflation on the side of the tire.
Okay.
You know, it's not a bad idea to carry an upper and lower radiator hose. It's not a bad idea to carry some heater hose. It's not a bad idea to carry oil and coolant. But at 50,000 miles, I'm still saying, you've been around the world twice, but we're going to expect that small diesel is going to be the 150, 200 mark.
Well, we don't know. It's brand new.
I know, but historically speaking, the diesels go, I mean, we've got diesels that are the 200,000 and 300,000 mile.
Yeah, but we also have the 6.0 diesels that go 20,000 and can't stay on the road.
I know, but that's different. I was avoiding that conversation.
But I'm saying I don't know much about those diesels, so I don't know if there's something I say, hey, put one of these in the glove box because you'll need it at some point. So I don't know.
You know something else too, and Gary, this is I'm going to deviate from my hate of the internet. Get on the internet and start looking at this truck. If you don't see anybody that's got any kind of EGR problems, any kind of oil consumption problems, any kind of coolant leak problems, and there's one guy out there that's pissed off because the windshield wiper motor broke, forget that. You're just looking at, does everybody love these trucks? Because I promise you, if you query a vehicle on the internet and you go through the reviews and stuff, you'll find something that's a big old POS.
Yeah, or just 2017 Canyon diesel problems. You know, and if everyone at 50,000 miles is, you know, replacing their fuel pump relay, then I'd probably carry one of those in the glove box.
And the good news is, too, on the Canyon, here's the deal. Almost always on the GM, they have a relay for the fuel pump. They have a relay for the air conditioning.
And nice tow hooks.
And nice...
I'm just kidding.
You know what? I'm going to shut his mic off so he doesn't get to do that anymore. And the idea is that when you go through those gyrations, it's different. So I just run the tires up and shift the transmission the way you want it to shift. And if you want, I'll send my grandkids with you. Okay.
Well, we actually took our oldest grandkid with us and he stayed with us for a month. He turned 7. So that was a blast. We did a lot of fishing. On the transmission fluid, or transmission oil, the temperature gauge showed at the most 230 to 235. And I can't find anywhere what's acceptable or not acceptable.
I can answer that question for you in a heartbeat. The transmission and the coolant temperature should be within 20 degrees of one another.
Okay.
So if it's 230, I'll bet your motor's running up there at 220.
Yeah.
Okay. That's it. And I'll tell you, I have a lot of experience in giving you that because I haul horses and big stuff up and down the mountain, and I have both of those gauges. And I'm always watching those gauges, and I said the same thing to myself. I wonder what the difference is. And in my Dodge truck, and I'm hauling a lot load, bigger load than you are, in my Dodge truck,
yeah,
it's within 20 degrees. So, alrighty, listen, thank you very much, Gary, John, Ben, and Nick. You guys stay there. When we come back, we're going to grab you.
Take the Patriot with you wherever you go. The 960 The Patriot mobile app, your Alexa, TuneIn, iHeart, and radio.com. It's your voice of reason 24/7.
2020 is the year your business is going to thrive.
Or will it?
Resolve to use digital marketing to your advantage with the help from the pros at Salem Surround. We give you all the right tools to surround your target audience and turn website visitors into website leads. Contact Salem Surround for a free evaluation of your digital presence and learn how to get your advertising message in front of today's consumers. Learn more at surroundphoenix.com. Surroundphoenix.com. Connecting you with new customers.
Tanning, indoors or out, increases your risk of skin cancer, including melanoma, the second most common cancer in young adults and the leading cause of cancer death in women 25 to 30.
Tanning doesn't make me look healthier. My ambition does. Tanning doesn't make me stand out. My drive does.
Tanning can cause wrinkles, age spots, and even melanoma, the cancer that kills one person every hour. And using tanning beds significantly increases your risk of developing melanoma.
Tanning doesn't make me glow. My individuality does.
Tanning doesn't make me feel better about myself.
I got the job.
Yeah. Congrats.
My confidence does.
Tanning doesn't make you more beautiful. It only makes you more at risk. Stop tanning. Learn more at spotskincancer.org. A message from the American Academy of Dermatology.
So, Justin, I was playing that video game Force Brigade, and it was pretty cool. I was running down this, like, digital path, and I met this digital frog, and he was all like... Then I went playing in this virtual stream where this water, it looked almost real. It was this whole electronic forest world. So what did you do?
Well, my parents took me to the forest, the real forest. I was running down this, well, it was an actual path. Then I saw this real-life frog. It was all, like, ribbit, and I saw an owl, too. Then I played in this amazing stream with water around my ankles, like wet water. Then me and my sister and my parents sat around a campfire and told cool stories all night long.
Oh, that's pretty cool, too.
This weekend, unplug. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Alrighty, 44 minutes after the hour, and we're going to get to the callers real quick, but Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Let me tell you about Jeremy. Jeremy is the lead tech there. Let me give you an example. There is no such doctor out there that is capable of growing hair on your head all the way to your bunions and your plantar, how do they pronounce that?
Plantar fasciitis?
Yeah, all the way to your feet. There's no doctor that can handle the entire human body from top to bottom. Jeremy can handle any car, bumper to bumper, paint, paint and body, alignment. He can do everything. He has passed every single ASE test that they make. So this kid has talents that I don't have and I'll never have. But to give you that example, as far as cars are concerned, he's bumper to bumper no matter what and everything in between. Me, I'm under the hood, the transmission, the suspension, the steering. But there's a lot of things that I can't do. But if you're near 38th Avenue and Indian School and you need somebody really, really good, then Larry Harker's Auto is the place I'd go. John, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, guys. Excellent show. I always enjoy listening to you and always learn something.
Thank you.
I am calling in reference to an earlier call about an alternator and an internal regulator problem. My question is, what is the proper way to jumpstart a vehicle? I was told that if you are the person giving the jumpstart, that you should turn on your air conditioner, specifically a fan motor, because that's where the surge of electricity will go and prevent things like the internal regulator from blowing. Has that ever been a solution?
No, that's never been a problem either. The proper way to jumpstart is to put the cables on the car that's good, and then put the positive cable on the dead car and then the negative cable. Then you bring the RPMs up on the car that's jumping the dead one. You wait for just some short period of time, 2 or 3 minutes. You turn the headlights on the dead car, and if they're white and bright, that means you're typically pumping power into that. You see, the regulator's just going to watch the voltage. When you hook up jumper cables and that car's just dead, there is no voltage exchange, so the regulator's not going to do anything. But when you turn the key on and you start asking for electricity, then the internal regulator's going to say, hey, I just saw a volt drop. I want to see between 13.8 and 14.8, and I just saw it drop down to 10.1 or 12.1. Then the regulator's going to go, okay, I'm going to open the gate, and we're going to put more electricity into my alternator. Because it doesn't know that you're hooking on a car. The worst case you can do when you're jump starting is create a spark. And if there's gas on top of the battery, it'll blow up, and you have, unless you've been in Vietnam, you have never heard an explosion as bad as a battery blowing up. It'll shake the neighborhood. And the scary part is if you're standing there, now you're covered in battery acid. And if you're not anywhere near a garden hose, you're in big trouble. But the internal, and let me tell you something about internal regulated. We don't have any problems with those. We're not seeing anything with them. We're not constantly replacing alternators. We're not taking them apart and replacing the regulators. But I will tell you this too. If you don't have all your grounds in place and the alternator loses sight of the battery, then the regulator loses sight of the battery, then the regulator go, oh, the voltage is zero, and it'll pump that alternator up. And yes, it'll take it into 15 and maybe even 16 volts. It'll cook the battery.
Oh.
But it's not likely to cause damage to itself. It's likely to cook the battery. So, no, I don't think we've had an internally regulated alternator in 5 years, or where we've had a regulator inside an alternator that was a problem. We've had dead alternators.
Yeah.
But we haven't gone and replaced any part of an alternator for that reason. So, alrighty.
Got it. Thank you very much. Okay. Have a great weekend.
And to you too, John. Thank you very much. Ben, you're up next.
Hello.
Hi. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just purchased a 2004 Nissan Armada, the V8, not too long ago. And lately I noticed that it's taking a lot of oil. It's not smoking at all, and it doesn't leave any puddle in the driveways. But in about a couple of weeks or a week and a half, it uses up like a couple quarts. A lot
wow.
of oil. I keep refilling it. And it only has 130,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
So,
well, see, the oil can only go two places. It's leaking and coming out the tailpipe. You know,
yeah.
that the diff now the catalytic converter could be consuming some of the oil that's coming out of the tailpipe. That's possible. If that's the case, then I'd pull, I mean, if you charge me with working on your car, I'd pull the spark plugs. If I find a spark plug that's all carboned up and it looks completely different than the other seven, then that's the problem. Then I'm going to do a wet dry compression test with that cylinder and the one next to it. So you do a wet dry compression test and you go, oh, well, this one comes up good. So they're both at 120 pounds, but that one bad one didn't, it started at 80 or 70. So it could be that the cat is covering up your consumption. If I were you, now let me ask you a question. You know where the full mark and add mark is, yes?
No.
On the dipstick.
On the dipstick.
Yes.
Okay. Don't add any oil until it's at the add mark, okay? Because if you overfill it, if it's halfway between add and full and you're adding a quart, it's not going to like that other half a quart.
Yeah.
So just put it in. But really and truly, the only way to find it, if you're sure it's not leaking, I'm going to take your word for it. But the only way to find it is find out which cylinder it is. Now, if it's only one cylinder, the catalytic converter will take care of the smoke. But that's what you're going to have to do. And once you pull all eight plugs, I can guarantee you, you'll see the bad one. All righty?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. You betcha. Nick, you're up next.
Yeah. Hi. Is this Mark?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, hi, Mark. I'm calling about my sister. She's got a 2007 Jeep Grand Cherokee Laredo,
okay.
And she's selling it, and I'm making sure everything is in good shape, and I was checking the oil and all that, and I'm looking for the transmission dipstick, and I can't find one, and I've never experienced that before. That's my first question, and I have another question not related.
17, you said?
It's a 2007
Seven.
Jeep Wrangler Laredo.
Okay.
And doesn't have a dipstick for the transmission.
Okay. And it's an automatic, of course. We didn't start putting sealed transmissions in.
That seems early.
Yeah. I could be wrong. But if you look in your owner's manual and look at the maintenance schedule, if it says check transmission fluid and there's an asterisk and then at the bottom it says you have to do it from underneath the car, then yes. I don't think a 13-year-old car has a sealed transmission.
No, I don't either. And it may be one of those things, too, where they we have to use that universal dipstick that we have here. It doesn't actually have a dipstick. It has to be done by someone who knows how to read it, like a universal, but where you plug it into the side.
Right.
But I don't, right off the top of my head, I mean.
What part of town do you live in?
I live in East Phoenix, up by Squaw Peak.
Okay. Give me some cross streets, major cross streets.
Okay. 16th Street and Glendale Avenue.
Okay. 18. I'd probably go to Martin's Auto. And if you go to Martin's Auto, he's at 16th Street, just south of Indian School. 16th Street, south of Indian School. And he's pretty good. He should be able to answer it. Dave Martin is his name. You can go to 20th Street Auto at 21st and Indian School. And he's really good. I mean, I've got a lot of guys in your particular area. That Kurt's Auto is I-17 in Bell. You go a little north. But the real question here is just take it by someplace and say, I can't find the dipstick. Now, we're going to look in our books real quick, and you know we'll figure it out real quick. Now, here's a way you can do it. Get on the Internet and order a dipstick, a transmission dipstick for your car, or a dipstick tube. And so you go in and go, dipstick tube for an 07 Grand Cherokee, then if nobody has a dipstick or a dipstick tube, then it's a sealed transmission.
Sealed transmission. Okay, yeah. And how many miles should I change the transmission oil? I've heard a couple different stories, like 60,000 miles.
Okay, I can answer that. Everybody has an idea, but I always go by the book. Now, you probably have a synthetic transmission in there, and my guess is going to be somewhere between 75 and 100. I'm guessing. Under normal driving conditions. But the best thing you could do for yourself is just look in the owner's manual and see what the heck it says. Your owner's manual could go to 120 for all I know. So I follow the owner's manual on my truck because I figure Dodge isn't going to lead me astray. And I don't do anything prematurely I try to hit, you know, pretty close to what I just crossed 103. I think my next major point, like 120, something like that.
If it says 120 and you pull the dipstick at 100 and it's black and tar, then it's okay to do it. I mean, but yeah, for a good, rule of thumb, the owner's manual is the best place.
Yeah. Martin's is Indian School and 16th Street just south. I don't have anybody close to you from a transmission shop or from a repair shop that I can send you to, but Martin's and Blackwell and some of those guys, 25th Street Auto, those guys all could do, answer the question. And that's what you want, is just to answer the question. All righty?
All right. Yeah, and my second question, not related to transmission, is I'm checking this car out for my sister, and I'm turning the air conditioner on, and there is a clicking noise, kind of a loud clicking noise, tick, 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 like that, underneath the dash.
Center of the dash.
Yeah.
Okay.
When I turn on the AC, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's the blend door. I want you to think of a blend door has three positions. It's going to send air to the defrost. It's going to send air to the center vents, or it's going to send air to the floor. So when it starts ratcheting like that, the linkage is broken, the door is stuck, it has bubble gum, it has a Taco Bell wrapper in there.
I think that one is real, real common, because I think that's the same place as some of the Jeeps are, the Jeep Wranglers.
Yeah.
I think you can pull that side panel of the center console off and access the actuator.
And that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Some of those are really easy. And we did the one on that Dodge not too long ago where the dashboard from pillar to pillar in the front seats and the console were out of this thing.
It just depends.
I mean, if you saw your car with nothing between the back seat of the seats and the windshield, you'd be concerned. And that's why we take our guys and we chain them to the car. They can't even go to the bathroom because we can't have them lose track of where they've been. That's the issue. So in your particular case... Say that again?
Where is that access panel at?
Oh, well, you probably have four of those actuators on the vehicle. You need to find out which one it is because they're kind of all over the place. You need to isolate which one it is before we do anything further.
And the access panel is just one of them. That it's not too often we have an easy way into the blend door. And sometimes people will just say, wire it shut, wire it open. Or if it sticks in one place, then they say, I can live with it. It's just out the center vents. But if it goes through the windshield or if it goes through the floor, a lot of people say, no, I need to fix it. So you're just going to have to make those decisions. But, and you can call around and get an estimate on it if you want. Or if you call around and get an estimate and you're negotiating for the price of this, then that obviously would be something I'd want to, you know, off of the price to fix the blend door. So just get a worst case scenario. Like I said, it's the motor, the linkage, or the door. One of those three things. It's rarely the signal to it. Excuse me just a minute. Thank you. Anyway, 602-5, I don't know if we don't have enough time for a caller, but I will tell you this. My email is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Sitting next to me is Alan. I'll pass on the information to him as well. But what this show is all about, it is paid programming. But as you can tell, I'm not trying to sell you anything. This is all about you and your car needs. All we're trying to do is give you the very best advice. And years ago, in 1988, when we first started our radio show, the number one question was, where's your shop at? And my mother said to me, it's terrible that you're doing that. Don't you have any friends in the industry? And I said, yeah, I do. She says, start referring to them. And that was the beginning of the best car repair shops, according to Mark Salem. So it's not interesting on where my shop is at. That's not important. What's important is to guide you and take care of you the best I can and make it the very best advice I can give you. So that's why I send you other places. Other than the fact that if it's something that we do and not too many do, then I might tell you where we're at. But nevertheless, mark@marksalem.com.